Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we go to Montana State University Bozeman to join Chef Sean Sherman, author of The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. The book honors Sherman's foods from his Lakota heritage. The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, co-author with Beth Dooley, just won the James Beard Foundation Book Award in the Best American Cookbook category. Sherman is owner of his company, The Sioux Chef, and co-founder of Natives, the culinary nonprofit organization North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems. Chef Sherman spent 3 days at MSU delivering a public lecture and teaching a master's class for the Native American Studies students and the MSU culinary staff. I caught up with him as he was working with the Culinary Arts, Hospitality Management, and the Montana Pro Start students in the Gallatin Arts Kitchen for a fundraising dinner. We also talked to Chef Jill Ava Flores, the Culinary Services sous chef who procured many of the foods for this dinner, to Dana Thompson, CEO of the Sioux Chef and Natives, and from Pro Start students who help with preparing the dinner. I sit down with Chef Sherman as he takes a break from preparing tonight's dinner. We discover how his Indigenous food movement began.
I came to a point in my chef career. I was living in Minneapolis and realizing that I could find food from all over the world, but nothing that represented the land and the people and the history of where we were standing. So it just seemed silly, and it just really shot me on a path to try and understand my own heritage from growing up on Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota and being enrolled in, as an Oglala Lakota, and wanting to know what my ancestors were eating and why isn't there a cuisine out there like this. And so that's what we've been doing for the past few years, is just really trying to showcase that Indigenous foods and Native American cuisine of the U.S. and Canada and anywhere around the world where there's Indigenous peoples, really, but just showcasing the beauty and the Indigenous knowledge around the foods, and by removing the colonial ingredients and influence and just looking at what was here and creating something brand new and beautiful with it.
In our country, diners may have some idea of cuisines from other countries. When one thinks of Italian, French, Mexican, or Chinese, there are preconceived images of what foods represent these countries. Ironically, when I say Indigenous food, you might have to think for a long moment. Sherman says of Native American Indigenous cuisine.
Well, I think a lot of people, when they hear the term Native American foods, they'll think of fry bread or Indian tacos, bison maybe. But there was so much more to it. And for us, it was really with the plants. So really understanding the wild plants in our regions that really define who we are and the flavors that are around us and the health and the medicine too, because everything was coming from that. But also where there was Native American agriculture and all of the beautiful diversity of the seeds that were out there with corns and beans and squash and sunflower seeds and chilies and things like that, and understanding how widespread that part of Indigenous cuisine was of the Americas also, and just looking at all these pieces. And it's just because Indigenous people had this blueprint of how to live sustainably within any region, utilizing only plants and animals for everything, from food, for medicine, for shelter, for clothing. So it was just taking all that knowledge from that past and applying it to today to create something, again, beautiful with it. So for us, it's just looking at North America through an Indigenous lens and seeing the diversity through culture and landscape. So understanding, like, there's an immense amount of diversity in botany and plants and animals around each region. So if you can picture, like, driving across North America and stopping at Indigenous restaurants along the way, you would see that cultural diversity instead of the homogenous way it is today, where you stop and you see the exact same hamburger and craft beer style and Coca-Cola on every single stop across the country. So just understanding how much we can learn from Indigenous food ways and apply it today to become more sustainable within our own food ways, within our own communities. I think it's an important lesson for lots of people to learn, and just to realize that history goes back pretty deep and much further than Laura Ingalls Wilder does.
The story did indeed begin before the times depicted by Little House on the Prairie. Mother Nature had her own plans. Chef Sherman respects the occurrence and rhythm of food as it exists naturally. He honors food that is in season, processing and cooking it for the best representation.
It is celebrating food as it comes into harvest periods. So you're looking at wild foods, or when it's time to pick berries, or when it's time to gather mushrooms, or whatever it might be. And looking at even the agricultural piece, when it's time to harvest your foods. And then it's a matter of preserving those foods so they can last the rest of the year, too. And it is living within the seasons. And if you look at Native American tribes, a lot of their seasons were guided by the moons to know which season it was, which food was coming out. Because it's like the moon of the choke cherry. It really depends on the tribe and region of how they named those pieces. But everything was centered around food and season, because food was the center of all of us. And people never had to pay for food before Europeans came over, so people were making their own food all the way up until that time period, which was really just in the 1800s, which is not ancient history. So this food was just the generation of my great-grandfather's generation, and try to understand how they were living as Lakota on the plains and utilizing their foods.
So as far as the foods are concerned, I believe the Native culture takes food and gathering and kinship almost to another level, because you as a family go out and gather the food or hunt the food.
Yeah, it's very community-based and family-based, of course, and it's something that people celebrated together. So during harvest seasons, people would all chip in and help, because back in those days, everybody's job was food. You're either hunting, gathering, gardening, farming, foraging, preserving, building crafts into things to process foods, to make foods, to hold foods. Everything was centered around food, as it should be, because food should be the center of us. It's who we are. And if we can control our foods, we can really control our destinies. So we should be very conscious about being resourceful and less wasteful with foods, and just putting foods everywhere. We believe, like with indigenous communities, they utilized permacultural designs a lot and helped plants grow in their area so they would have large food sources of things. So we don't need giant lawns that do nothing for us when we could be growing food everywhere.
That's absolutely correct. Let's step back. How did this all begin? You said that you wanted to go back and find out about your native culture and how food was integrated in that. Tell me from the beginning, where did your interest of food come from?
Well, I started working in restaurants at a very young age, mostly out of necessity, because we were poor and my mom moved my sister and I off the reservation, and she was going to school and working three jobs. And I started cooking at home at a really young age. And then I started working in restaurants when I had barely turned 13. So I've been working in restaurants since that time period. And it was important. So I didn't know I was going to become a chef later in life. That just kind of happened. But when I did, I really fell into it, and I really started learning about different kinds of cuisines. I learned French and Italian, and I studied Ethiopian and Thai and Japanese and whatever my curiosity was taking me, until I hit that point where I realized I didn't know anything about my own heritage cuisine, and I started on the path to try to figure out why and what it was all about. I spent quite a few years of just researching before I opened up my business, which was the Sous Chef, S-I-O-U-X for the pun.
Did you contact relatives? Did you actually go live with people so that you can learn about the cuisine?
A lot of it was many different pieces. Because I always tease I couldn't just go online and order Joy of Native American Cooking, right? So I started reading a lot of books on ethnobotany. I know there was a deep connection of plants, and you find that commonality with indigenous peoples all around the world, where they're deeply connected to their environment, part of the balance of everything. So I'm just really starting to understand plants, I'm understanding Native American agricultural histories, I'm looking through historical texts for first contacts, and in the beginning really looking at things for just through a culinary lens and looking for food pieces to really understand, and talking to elders, talking to family members who grew up their whole lives on the reservation and are well into their 80s and 90s now, and trying to get food memories from them, and just really sifting through of what's been influenced by European culture and what was really here before, and trying to make a good understanding of it. But I really started to learn much faster when I started my business and started doing these foods on a daily basis and challenging myself to use only indigenous ingredients and cutting out colonial ingredients with dairy and wheat flour and processed sugar and beef, pork, chicken, and really looking at the plants and animals around me and trying to make cuisines out of those pieces.
What were some of the first meals that you served to introduce them to your cultural foods?
I was living in Red Lodge in Montana for a while when I was studying a lot of the wild foods at that point in time, and I was working in various restaurants in that region. And then I moved back to Minneapolis to start this business, so I started actively doing dinners at that point in time. So my first dinner was way up in northern Minnesota in a town called Bemidji, and we did an all Ojibwe spring dinner. And that must have been back in 2011 or 2012, and I started from there, and I slowly started just doing more and more dinners when trying to do only indigenous indigenous foods and ingredients and really thinking about history and region and season and utilizing those pieces to put those together till, you know, we got to the point where we have a catering company and we ran a really successful food truck in Minneapolis and we're getting ready to open up restaurants. And, you know, we've been around the world and been able to share this food with lots of people, and we've been able to go to many different regions around the U.S. and Canada and explore indigenous foods and all those different diverse regions everywhere.
Everywhere means around the world. Chef Sherman's intent of featuring what foods are right in front of us can be likened to the initiative taken by Chef René Redzepi of Noma in Copenhagen, who developed what they call the New Nordic Cuisine, a movement to feature in-season food in a pure, simple, and fresh form harvested from local waters and soils. Chef Redzepi started a nonprofit organization called MAD, the Danish word for food, to bring together a global cooking community with a social conscience, a sense of curiosity, and an appetite for change.
Well, I went to Noma and I met Chef Renee's team. They were putting on a symposium a couple of years ago called MAD Symposium on Food. And I met a lot of people there. And I didn't do any cooking there at that point in time, but we did go back again last year and we worked with the Nordic Food Lab, which was like their research and development nonprofit division out of Noma, and worked closely with some of those chefs and just had fun. We were all doing something unique. We were working with people from the Slow Food University in Italy. We were working with a chef from South Africa. So that was a lot of fun, but I've been able to be around a lot of large chef personalities from the world. But ours, you know, is something different because Indigenous Foods of America should be a thing. It should be here. There's no reason why we shouldn't see Native American restaurants all over the board. And if this is our role to help pave a path to show people how to do it in the style that we've done it, then great. We see a lot of talented chefs coming up and we want to continue that because this work was never about me personally. It was always something much larger. And it was fun to go into a culinary movement without having the ego of a chef to be the driving force, because this was really about revitalizing and reintroducing something that's vastly important, and there's so many lessons that we can all utilize out of it.
And what are those lessons?
Well, we were just trying to keep everything simple because we knew food was processed simply back in that time, and we were able to make plates look really beautiful because we could put artistry in the work that we're doing, but the pieces were simple. So we were not utilizing French techniques. We were making very simple sauces out of just berries or maybe some berries and wild ginger, or we were letting meats cook slow just in water with some few ingredients until they're really flavorful, or just taking dehydrated squash and rehydrating it with something, and just using very simple foods. And again, using techniques that you see indigenous peoples from around the world utilize everywhere, which was living without petroleum, basically, was a big part of it, and living without processed foods and taking time to process foods in your own ways in a very healthy ways.
Give me a specific now. You know, spring is emerging. The berries are going to come off the bushes. What happens with something like chokecherry or huckleberries? What would you do with that?
We like drying things out because we like to preserve them. We sometimes will dry them out with a little bit of a fire close by to help the heat to push them, and it actually creates a smoky flavor too, and that makes a really lovely sauce or a tea or whatever you want to do with them at that point in time. Springtime is here, so in Minnesota where I'm from, we'll start to see fiddlehead ferns popping up, we'll start to see ramps popping up, we'll start to see mushrooms coming out, and lots of edible greens everywhere, cattail shoots, things like that. And there's all sorts of great fun foods that we can start to play with right away in the spring. And you know, maple season just passed us, so people were busy collecting sap and cooking it down into the syrups and sugars and things like that. So there's all sorts of fun things. Every season's got something different, and there's so much that blossoms during throughout the summer. It's just being connected to nature and being outdoors and being a part of that. And for growing a garden, growing some of these really cool heirloom Native American seeds that have been around for thousands of years in certain areas.
So are you going out and gathering all these ingredients for your meals?
We do what we can. We love being outdoors, so we try to spend a lot of time foraging, and it's just a part of the work that we do. And we've trained a lot of our staff to do a lot of that too, because we've created this indigenous-minded kitchen where we do spend a lot of time outdoors. We do forage for a lot of foods and gather a lot of foods to utilize, and are very aware of the seasons of things. And it's exciting for us when we find a big patch of something that we can bring back to the kitchen and process and utilize some for the rest of the year.
Have you noticed that your movement is encouraging farmers to produce some of the ingredients that you might need in your dishes?
We prioritize purchasing from indigenous vendors first, and we're hoping to drive some opportunities for more food producers, especially indigenous food producers. And being connected with a lot of indigenous seed keepers, we are able to network people to find and grow some of these really cool heirloom seeds and some of these seeds that have been in some of these regions for such a long time, because we're creating a demand for those kinds of foods. And we want to create opportunities, especially for indigenous peoples, to be centered around foods and create business around foods. And we see, hopefully, that the work that we're doing, especially with the nonprofit, of helping to design and open up restaurants all across the country eventually, that we can help create a lot of demand where people can start opening up food businesses all over the country.
Chef Sherman's visions and pursuits are large. Fortuitously, Dana Thompson came into his life and is currently CEO of The Sous Chef and co-founder of Natives.
John started the company in 2014, and he started it in the early part of September. We met about a month later. We were at an event together, and I got to taste the food and hear his story right at the very beginning. And I have four lines of Native blood through my mother's side and was so inspired by what I heard from him. I was just completely taken aback, and I literally felt electric shocks running through my body about the importance of what this means to Native communities and to world communities. Put my resume in front of him and said, "You're the visionary and the spokesperson, the genius and the chef, and you can't do everything else. And there's a lot more to do. So here's what I can do."
For Dana and Chef Sherman, their work is wide and vast to reveal what is basically right in front of us.
There is a requirement of education here, because if you ask the average person on the street, what is indigenous food, what is Native American food, I think that most people can't answer, which is very sad.
Yes, it is very sad, and we're working really hard to try to change that. We have been talking to all these people here that have a lot of knowledge about food sovereignty and why this is important, but we're going to have partners all over North America in order to reach our goal.
This night's menu, raising funds for Montana ProStart, is one featuring indigenous ingredients. Chef Jill Ava Flores goes through the menu and talks about how she secured most of the ingredients.
The first ingredient that we were able to get was bison that came from the reservation over by Flathead. And the reason we were able to find that is that through our Farm to Campus program, we have really developed some great relationships with the farmers and ranchers. Through those relationships, we're able to find more unique things, and that's been very helpful.
Why don't we step back for a second? Tell me about the Farm to Campus.
Sure. So in our MSU dining halls, we're really striving to get some local products into the dining halls. And we have what we've named our Farm to Campus program, and we have a coordinator, and she's helping us find products that we can get into the dining halls that are sustainable, not only to the environment, but also to us in the quantity that we need and the prices that we're looking at.
Was this a recent development?
No, MSU had dedication to the Farm to Campus program for a while, but we really have been pushing it for the last couple years. Some of the other parts of that have been, we've worked with Department of Agriculture, purchased 30 steers that they had raised and brought those into the dining hall. And then we also formed a partnership with the lamb department on campus, and we've bought 60 lambs from them now and served them in the dining halls. And then also we have been doing, for two summers now, we've been going to the local fairs purchasing 4-H pigs from the 4-H kits. So those three programs have all really been successful.
This is really wonderful that you're doing that, using the resources that are right here without having to go far away. So tonight, again, we'll go back to that. Let's start with appetizers, and let's go through what you're serving and maybe some of the more unusual ingredients.
Sure. So the first appetizer is bison with wild rice, meatballs, and cranberry sauce. As I said, the bison was local. It has a mirepoix in it that includes squash and leeks. And both the squash and leeks were a local purchase. And there's a company in town called The Root Cellar that enables us to get more local produce than we normally would, because we don't have the manpower to process the vegetables. And so The Root Cellar gets them in from farmers and processes it for us. So two of those items came through them. The next one is sunflower tamale with dandelion pesto.
And this is the traditional tamale that's made with corn.
Correct. And then wrapped in a corn husk and then steamed.
And many times in traditional Mexican tamales, there's lard. And are you using lard?
We are not using lard. A more indigenous flair on that is to use sunflower oil. And also, we're using maple syrup instead of a sugar sweetener, which is more of an indigenous way to handle that. And then it's going to get a pesto sauce on it that's made with dandelion greens, which grow here in Montana. Those are definitely things that you can get here in Montana, just even in your backyard.
Yeah, which is great. We don't think about that.
Yeah, there's lots of things out there. And the next is yucca chips with black beans and smoked trout. The leeks, again, were from a local producer there, and the trout we were able to get through one of our vendors that we had formed a great partnership with.
And I'm curious about the yucca. Again, another vegetable that you don't see, or plant we don't see on our plates normally. Tell me about that.
Yucca is a pretty sturdy root, and you can roast it, you can fry it. It has good nutrients, and it is usually fairly inexpensive, too. It is indigenous to the United States. Some folks do harvest it out in the wild in Montana. That dish gets microgreens, which are also grown here in Bozeman. For the main dinner, we're having rabbit, sunchokes, dandelions, and dried strawberries. Sunchokes are another item that Montanans can easily grow and in abundance. They're a root veg. They put a beautiful flower on, and they're very tasty. They're like a potato that you can roast.
Who grows them this time of the year? You know, of course, that one of the issues of tonight's dinner is that we're really just emerging from winter. A lot of things are they grown in hothouses?
The sunchokes did not come from Montana, but they are indigenous to our areas. But your sunchoke, I've seen them in the farmer's market by May.
And how is the rabbit process?
This rabbit is going to be stewed tonight with some various herbs and spices that are indigenous to this area. We have some sage, and there was some leeks.
Sage is one of the most readily available herbs that we find around, and in some ways we take them for granted.
Yes, herbs are definitely an easy way to flavor your dishes and something that we can easily grow during the summer and then dry for winter use. So next we have another yucca dish, and it's a roasted yucca, watercress, and smoked trout, and rose hips. And rose hips is another really underutilized option that we have here in Montana. You definitely can go out and pick those rose hips and dry them and use them for teas and flavor stews, and there's all kinds of options there. So the next dish that we have is cedar braised bison with huckleberries and corn shoots. So the bison is part of that, the one bison that we had bought. And the huckleberries, of course, they're frozen, and we'll use them, but you definitely can get those at peak season and make some tasty things with them.
And you said corn shoots. Are these the shoots of young corn before they become the husk and the kernels that we're familiar with?
Right. So kind of like microgreens. So they can seed them and grow them as shoots. These ones were grown in the dark, so they're yellow instead of green. They're very beautiful, full of nutrients. And there's lots of things that you can do at home yourself with growing micros or sprouting seeds that are very nutritious and bring spring right into your own home. And the last dish is a sunflower amaranth tart, apple, mint, and squash. And the squash came from the Root Cellar Company. The apples we got in, and we're slicing them and drying them for the tart. And amaranth, of course, is a great seed that's indigenous to the United States and Mexico that is really nutritious for you and very delicious.
And you're finishing that off with a cedar and maple tea. That's very interesting.
Yes, and it is very tasty. And the cedar was one thing that we had a little bit of trouble sourcing. So we ended up harvesting that ourselves. It's actually the green sprigs that you use. We went and harvested some, 15 pounds.
Do you think you might integrate this into a normal meal for the students here at MSU?
Sure. Actually, over Thanksgiving, we first did an indigenous dinner using the sous chef's book in November, and that was really successful with all of the students. And so that's kind of how it started for us here with the sous chef, is that first dinner that we did.
Do you remember what you served?
We also served the cedar braised bison that night. There is an indigenous granola, and we did several of the cookies We did deviled duck eggs. We did a pheasant dish, a hazelnut soup. We did some corn cakes that we did the nixtamalization on the corn. So we started with the dry corn and went through the whole process. I'd learned that process from my husband's family, who's from Mexico. And so that's something that I had been doing for the last 25 years. So we just brought it right into the kitchen.
Well, that's fantastic, because I will say that you don't normally see that process even thought about here in Montana.
Yeah, that's correct. And quite a few people in the kitchen learned how to do it. And then later on, the food truck on campus was also able to put that on the truck, and they had some tamales that we had nixtamalized the corn. So that was fantastic.
The process of nixtamalization is the soaking of corn kernels in an alkaline solution of limestone or wood ash and water. The process makes the kernels easier to grind for making tortillas or tamales. Let's now talk to some of the ProStart students from Flathead High School in Kalispell who are in the kitchen with Chef Sherman. Anthony DeMail shares.
I have been working on the rabbit, and I've honestly learned a lot because I did not know what could pair so well with rabbit, but I've learned that it goes well with like apples and maple syrup and stuff like that. It's just, it never really occurred to me how much can go into it, so it just amazed me.
For Angela Brimberry, it was her first time working with amaranth.
I didn't know you could pop them, and it was just something fun and new to learn. You just took a dry pan without oil and put the heat on for like medium low heat, and then just wait it turns white, just kind of like it pops till it pops, starts popping.
Finally, we hear from Anissa Gravinch.
I was preparing the bison meat and wild rice meatballs, and it also had a lot of strange ingredients that I'd never worked with before. I personally didn't prepare the wild rice, that was done beforehand, but I did the minced leeks. And we also had squash and sage and applewood smoked salt that went into the meatballs. But we're using the rice as like our binder instead of eggs or breadcrumbs, like what you would typically see in meatballs. So,
before we end, I recruited the help of Curtis Jarlett. He was kind enough to take my call in helping me pronounce the words rabbit, bison, apple, and tea in the Crow language.
I was born in Crow Agency, Montana, and I grew up on the Crow Indian Reservation, right between Crow Agency and Lodgegrass, a little place they call Benteen. There used to be some stockyards there, and so folks would refer to that area as the Benteen Flats, but that's where I grew up. The Crow word for rabbit is Izashbideh, Izashbideh. The word for bison is Bijeh. The word for apple is Bulafbashua. The word for tea is Bidishpit Abe.
Curtis further comments about his native language.
There are some sounds in the Crow language that aren't commonly used in English. There's a sound that's symbolized by the letter X, and I'm told it's sort of like the CH in German. But it sounds kind of like, and so that's a sound that's commonly used in the Crow language.
The fundraising dinner was served family style, and Curtis explains.
Family, you'd say Ashishkaluhawada, which means people who live in one lodge, basically. And so you could say Luhawada Malusua or Malusadwa, which would mean the way a family would eat. That might be somewhat similar, but it wouldn't necessarily translate into the mental imagery that you get when you talk about family style meals.
Perhaps Dana Thompson best summarizes the spirit of tonight's family style meal.
It's about sharing knowledge, and it's such a great thing because you can talk about the flavors, you can talk about how the food was processed or where it was foraged or where it came from or who gathered it for you, and it does bring a community together. There's just a lot to talk about, and processing the foods, the community that's back there in that kitchen right now is going to be very deeply bonded after this day in the kitchen, and that's a really beautiful thing. We get to see a lot.
May Indigenous foods become a part of your daily eating. Again, many thanks to Curtis Jarlett for the brief Crow language lesson. Theme music has been provided by Parker Brown. For more information about this program, the Sous Chef, and Natives, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.